I've heard visitors to Beacon comment, "You don't talk about God here." They want to hear about God. They need religion to be about God. And I've heard others say, "God is very present at Beacon services." The song Beacon used to sing as the children went out, in its original words, say, "May the love of God surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go." Many Unitarians have changed those words to, "May the spirit of love surround you." Well, contrary to the wishes of the composer, and that's why we don't sing it anymore, these words probably reflect, in a very simple way, the theology of our churches. The spirit of love is very present. We may not often use the word God, but we mean love. Often, many of us, I think. Do I dare say a blanket statement? We mean love. As exemplified in the spirit of our community, each of us really does choose our own language to express the sentiment. Some people wonder if you can even have a religion if you don't have a set of beliefs about God. And some people do dismiss Unitarianism as a religion because we don't explicitly worship a God in our services. What's going on? One of the journals I receive, and probably the one I use the most as a resource for services, is Parabola, a journal of tradition, myth, and a search for meaning. The summer issue was about God and various ways God is perceived. I wondered if I could do a series on God. It's not the topic I find easiest to articulate. And various conceptions. Of course, there's lots written about it. And this is my first attempt, the first in a series, I hope. This whole endeavor to describe God, though, reminds me of the story about the elephant with five blind men, each touching a different part and trying to describe it. Each, of course, has a different story. The guy feeling the elephant's moving and snaky-feeling trunk has a different story than the guy feeling the elephant's very sturdy legs. For some of us, our language of reverence is scientific and concrete. For others, it is more mystical or personal or abstract. What I will be trying to describe today is a religious humanism, a religious naturalistic humanism. Theologian William Murray, in his book Reason and Reverence, defines humanism as the affirmation of the worth and dignity of every person, a commitment to human betterment, and the necessity for human beings to take responsibility for themselves and the world. This book is a good one. I would recommend it to you. It's very readable. He goes on to qualify this very broad definition. There are many kinds of humanism: Christian humanism, Jewish humanism, secular humanism, religious humanism, to name only the most common ones we Unitarians hear and think about. Religions tend to be described in one of three ways: intellectual, affective, or practical religion. If you think of a set of beliefs or doctrines, that is an intellectual approach. Affective religion is understood primarily as feelings and emotions. And practical religion focuses on ethical education. Most religions have all three aspects, of course, but usually one dominates. Religion without a belief in God is not commonly recognized in North America, but is certainly not uncommon around the world. Confucianism, Taoism, and some forms of Buddhism are examples. Christian theologian Paul Tillich used as a definition of religion, quote, "the dimension of depth in life, having to do with one's ultimate concern." Mircea Eliade, scholar of the history of religion, said that religion has to do with the acknowledgement of the sacred or the holy, however that is understood. Religion is the search for meaning and purpose to your life. How can I be and become more fully human? How can I live as intensely, as joyfully, and as responsibly as possible? That is what religion is. Humanism has been around since at least as far back as Confucius, around 500 BCE. It's been considered a philosophy, mostly. A few Greeks of the classical Greek era were skeptical of all the gods in the Greek pantheon. During the Renaissance, Erasmus spoke of humanism. Critical study of texts began, of the ancient text, and the use of reason was valued rather than what the church said. Humans were beings of ethical and intellectual worth. Renaissance humanism remained quite theistic, though. A key to the development of humanism was the Reformation idea that ordinary people do not need priests to intervene between them and God. Martin Luther taught that each person has direct access to the divine. He called it a priesthood of all believers. By extension, this would come to mean the religious experience. Schleiermacher understood religion as an internal experience of each individual, not a set of beliefs. In 1841, Ludwig Feuerbach suggests that God is a human invention, a projection on the cosmos of the best attributes and highest values humans can imagine. And, of course, the rise of the scientific empirical method and more concrete scientific understandings of the natural world have furthered the emergence of humanism. Darwin's theory of evolution upset the image the church had used for so many years, the great chain of being. Darwin's theory of evolution implied that the earth was much older than written in the Bible. Evolution sees humans as a part of the natural world. Unitarians and Transcendentalists of the late 1800s moved more into humanism. Ralph Waldo Emerson critiqued the authoritarianism of the church and Bible, even miracles. The Transcendentalists emphasized the importance of personal religious experience. Theodore Parker, another one of the Transcendentalists, believed that the Christian faith would be valid even if Jesus had never really lived. That was a bit controversial. In the early years of the 20th century, the seeds of the theist-humanist controversy were sown. This is a controversy within the Unitarian denomination. Two ministers of other faiths each found refuge in Unitarianism because we didn't have a creed and they had found that they could not fit into their former Christian world. In 1920, Curtis Rees, speaking at Harvard Divinity School, asserted that the lack of a creed and the insistence on individual freedom of belief was the essence of liberal religion, not a particular set of beliefs. He affirmed a naturalistic religion, proclaiming that the purpose of religion is not to glorify God, but to promote the development of personality through devotion to worthwhile causes and to advance human welfare here on earth. John Dietrich wrote that there are two kinds of religion, one which thrives on human weakness and failure and is built on threat of punishment, and one which has faith in people who do not look for consolation or help from above. This second way teaches people to be self-sufficient and work to better the world we live in. Dietrich built on the psychological insights of Freud that the concept of God began with the fear of ancient peoples in the face of natural forces they had no scientific way of understanding. Now that we understand such natural forces, the idea of God seems unnecessary. The controversy started in 1921 when Rees invited Dietrich to speak at a large liberal church in Chicago. Dietrich said that religion needs to be modernized, meaning that it must give off belief in a supernatural deity and should emphasize human powers to achieve happiness and social change. A Unitarian layman, a professor of philosophy, begged to differ. He wrote in the Unitarian magazine of the day called the Christian Register, attacking religious humanism. This professor averred that Unitarianism should stand for freedom and for what he called, quote, a common faith in God. Dietrich, however, and his followers moved Unitarianism into a faith which built toward the common good. We sing that many Sundays in that song, number 128. for the common good. What emerged was a humanism quite individualistic, even secular. Reason was very highly emphasized, and compassion and empathy were downplayed. In practice, humanism became an orthodoxy within our walls. The idea of God, even the word, was taboo for quite some time among us. Christians felt very marginalized. And now the pendulum has swung. By 1997, the UU World carried an article about humanism, calling it the marginalized majority. God language has come back into vogue, although I don't think it carries much of the traditional meanings. There's the example of the Reverend Scott Alexander, who calls himself a humanist and a naturalistic mystical theist. He uses both of those terms because he believes that something he calls the Spirit of God is animating the world and all living beings. God is a powerful spiritual presence of love, decency, joyfulness, and hope, he says, but not a supernatural authoritarian deity. With the 1980s demand for spirituality came redefinition of older terms. I don't think that Reverend Alexander is lonely in his theology. And yet, to a large extent, this notion of God is unspoken, because we don't say the word that much. We can use the older terms as a language of reference. Some of us do. Many do not. There's an undercurrent of the spirit in much of Unitarianism these days. Gone is the secular humanist orthodoxy, which made it all too uncomfortable to challenge the color of God's hat or even the existence of God. This summer, I was blessed. There's that traditional language I would not have felt comfortable using even 10 years ago. I was blessed this summer to travel intimately through a very big chunk of nature. I paddled rivers of various sizes, lakes with stomach-heaving waves, and lakes so still you could scarcely discern the line between sky and water. Whitewater, rocks, mud. All the nature I could want. So many times I would look up from my paddling to gaze at the shoreline or off at the waves and be moved with awe that I was really there, with wonder that it could be so beautiful. My experience in the natural world grounds my religious naturalism. Understanding myself as a mere speck in the universe is humbling. I know that while there are many things I have control of, there are many more I do not. I am just a small part of the whole great big picture. Nature itself is not personal. Bad things happen to good critters all the time. It is the way of the world. I may not like to think about it, but some critters die so others can eat. This world is heaven enough, just the way it is. For the religious naturalist, science is not against religion. Rather, science explains nature. And it is in dialogue with religion to deepen understandings. The religious humanist sees the Big Bang Theory as creation story, as the universe story. It lays the foundation for all the evolution that came after. And that becomes our mythic core. There's a parody song, I am humanist, you are theist, that came out of that theist-humanist controversy. Sometimes it's sung affectionately. Sometimes it has not been sung so affectionately. It starts out, you are theist, I am humanist. I think that you're naive. You have no proof to offer as truth. You simply say, I believe. I won't go on, as I'd like to say that it too has become obsolete, as the boundaries of both theist and humanist have shifted and even overlap sometimes. William Murray reminds us, to be religious does not require that one accept the existence of a supernatural being. To be religious is a matter of one's attitude toward all of life. The religious aspect of humanism consists of an appreciation of the dignity and worth of every person. Reverence and wonder at the world of nature, at human creativity, and at life itself. a sense of the unity of all things, joy in human community, and a commitment to a cause that transcends the self. More than belief in a deity, these values define what it means to be religious. Amen.